This is Eli Schwartz, author of Product-Led SEO, the why behind building your organic growth strategy. And you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, and thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where each week I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book, and which was named by Forbes as one of 11 smart podcasts that will keep you in the know, and named by LinkedIn as one of 10 podcasts that will make you a better marketer. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since you're a listener to the Marketing Book Podcast, and I read every book featured on the show, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or any other resource I know of for whatever challenge you're facing, send me a LinkedIn connection invite with a message indicating you're a listener so I won't mistake you for a spammer and ignore you, and I will do my best to get you pointed in the right direction. I do this podcast to help me and my listeners keep up with the latest ideas that matter most in the quickly changing and somewhat overwhelming world of modern marketing and sales. My day job is running a marketing agency that helps manufacturers and industrial companies grow their revenue. To learn more about the problems we solve and how we do it, visit salesartillery.com. All right, enough yakking. Let's get on with the show. Today, we welcome Eli Schwartz to talk about his book, Product-Led SEO, The Why Behind Building Your Organic Growth Strategy, published by Houndstooth Press. Eli Schwartz is an SEO expert and consultant with more than a decade of experience working for leading B2B and B2C companies. Eli's strategies have generated millions of dollars in revenue for some of the internet's top websites. He's helped clients like Shutterstock, WordPress, Quora, and Zendesk execute highly successful global SEO strategies. As head of SurveyMonkey's SEO team, Eli oversaw the company's global operations, helped launch the first Asia-Pacific office, and grew the company's organic search from just 1% of revenue to a key driver of global revenue. Eli's work has been featured by TechCrunch, Entrepreneur.com, and Y Combinator, and he has given talks at business schools and keynoted conferences around the world. And interesting fact, on 9/11, he was working in a job across from New York City's World Trade Center and didn't come to work that morning because he was pissed off at his boss. Eli, congratulations on Product-Led SEO and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So did you ultimately patch things up with that boss?
I think that boss might have gone to jail.
Oh my goodness. So maybe it really was a creepy, bad boss.
He was absolutely horrific. Like I don't even remember what he chewed me out for, but it would made me so mad that I woke up and went back to bed. And he potentially saved me from getting injured or killed or traumatized or something. But yes, he was a terrible person.
Wow. Boy, talk about trusting your gut. I mean, you know, there was some invisible hand at work there, making things happen like that. And this is a very interesting story about that very historic and tragic day. So I was excited to see that the book has been endorsed by past guests on the Marketing Book Podcast, including Jay Baer and Joe Polizzi. They've both been on a number of times. And also, when I interviewed Shep Hyken about his book, I'll Be Back, he recommended this book. I don't know if you were aware of that, but I didn't see that he endorsed it, but he's a big fan of it as well.
I didn't know that. I had sent him a book because I love his books and I love his speaking. And I was like, Shep, can I share my book with you? So thank you, Shep. I'm glad that you read my book and endorsed it.
Yeah. So I have to say, I get to read all these books and they're all written in a different way, but I just loved your writing style. It was really, really clear, which I think is more difficult to do. And I think it's even more important for a book that touches on a few technical things, although this isn't a technical manual on how to do SEO, but at times the book was reminiscent almost of a manifesto, as if you had answered some of these things 1,000 times and you had figured out the clearest ways to make them. And at times, some of the things you said in the book, I got to wonder if it upsets some people in the SEO world.
Absolutely. Well, it was a manifesto. And it comes down to why I wrote the book, which is I, you know, I'm a consultant. I work with companies and I help them to understand where their potential is for SEO growth and how they should go ahead and implement it. I don't necessarily do it myself because I work with big companies. They have people that are waiting to do this and want to know what to do. They just need guidance. And so often, you know, as you've read the book, I have some things that are contrarian to what other people say. So I would tell these to clients or potential clients, and they would say, "That's interesting. It conflicts with everything we've ever heard.
Yes.
Where can we read more about this?" And I always wanted to be like, I have a book. So I wrote the book. So now when they say, "Where do I read more about this?" I say, "Go to Amazon and you can read my book." So that comes down to why I wrote the book. And yes, I'm sure it annoys people in the SEO world. And that's okay, because some of these things need to be said. And that is not the way I sell consulting. Like, you know, the piece in the book about how many people in SEO are very, very focused on SEO rankings.
Uh-huh.
You know, that is not the way I think it should be done. But yes, it would likely upset consultants who that is how they want to be measured and paid.
Well, and there are parts of the book that kind of blew my mind, but in a good way. In other words, this book is one of several over the last several years that kind of rewired some of my marketing brain. And the problem with your book, Mr. Schwartz, is that you take a stand and then you explain why, and damn it, I can't argue with it. So we're going to talk about some of that. And we can't get into everything, but I wanted to pull out a few of the things that I thought might, you know, surprise people and that I found very interesting. And also some things where over the years, I feel like I've explained some of these SEO things and I felt like I've been taking crazy pills, because I guess you and I are just going to continue to explain certain aspects that are myths of SEO. And turned into a little bit of a support group for me, because I feel like I was not the only person that wrestles with these. You certainly more than I do. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of what product-led SEO is, and that'll be the backbone of our conversation, I'd like to read an excerpt from the beginning of the book and then set the stage of SEO, a couple of definitions, and some of the background, because I still think there's a lot of folks that are still thinking of SEO from 20 years ago. And then there's a few other things I want to pull out later. And just so you know, Eli, you're being interviewed by a guy that is supremely comfortable asking really stupid questions, okay? So,
oh, no.
So get ready for that. Hey, it's part of the charm, I'm sure. No, let me just go to page. I want to read a couple things from page 18 and 19 here. In writing this book, I have drawn on over a decade of experience building SEO efforts both internally and externally for a variety of organizations. On many occasions, I have looked back and realized my SEO success in a specific scenario was not because of what I did, but how I did it. Strategic thinking was far more important than specific tactics. This book will show you how I think about many SEO topics using language that will be easily understood by internal teams to gain strategic alignment. It is my hope these ideas can help you achieve your growth goals and even further your career. Be warned, this is not a book to teach you the nuts and bolts of SEO. There are plenty of ways to learn SEO from blogs and books, some of which are referenced in this book. Rather, the goal of this book is to teach you the theory and logic behind good SEO practices. SEO is an art, and there is no rule book. Even Google or Bing engineers who spend their days tweaking search algorithms can't predict exactly how one individual site might be visible in search. They can, however, use the principles they know to improve a website's standing. And I will teach you to do the same. And then moving on, you write, this book is written for the marketing manager or executive who is responsible for SEO growth, whether or not they have a great understanding of the workings of SEO yet. At the same time, anyone even remotely involved in SEO should hopefully find the ideas in this book helpful in maximizing their SEO success. I intentionally do not give step-by-step guidelines. Rather, I will give you the why so that you, the reader, can develop your own best practices. In this book, I put forward a theory of SEO built from over a decade of experience, something I like to think of as product-led SEO. The product is the collection of anything on your site used to draw in the user, whether those are widgets, articles, photos, apps, downloads, webinars, or really anything at all. When the goal is to get a user to click from search, it should be because something of value to them will be discovered on the other side of that click. Product-led SEO builds a great product for users first and optimizes for search second. So first off, Eli, let's go to what the heck SEO is. You know, there might even be somebody who's brand new to marketing and they're I call them thrusters. There's a lot of people who listen, well, who first find the podcast because, let's say they're head of sales for some company and they say, oh, we're putting marketing on your business card too. You're responsible for those people as well. And they're like, wait a minute, I'm an engineer. I'm on the CEO track. What? I don't know anything about this marketing. So anyway, these thrusters are people who are suddenly thrust into a marketing role and they're trying to learn this. Or it might be a student out there. But if we could go to page 24, talk about what is SEO? And I say that because I can remember years ago I was doing a content workshop with a client and part of the conversation, I said, what does SEO mean to you? And the chief financial officer was in the conference room and she said, black hole. I said, what do you mean? She goes, we're paying someone to do it. I have no idea what they're doing. So please explain what SEO is.
If you can see me on video, I'm laughing. We're not on video.
You've probably been in that situation.
So I have a couple stories about this, but I did have a recent experience where I was, you know, at an event and the organizer said, oh, SEO? Yeah, that's a scam. And then I was forced to defend that in front of everyone. And then my other experience is very similar to what you just said. The CFO of a now public company, so one of those companies that went public in the last year, yeah, so many interesting tech companies have gone public, CFO reached out to me and he said, I need your advice. I think my marketing team is lying to me about SEO. Just tell me whether they're lying. They keep asking me for money and they just say, we're sorry, it's a black box. We don't own Google. Are they lying?
Well, they are marketers, so, you know.
And they lied to the CFO, and the CFO wasn't believing them anymore.
Uh-huh. So they said marketing is a black hole, or they said marketing?
No, they said Google's a black box.
Okay, black box, right.
The wrong thing that everyone says about Google.
Yes.
You say, oh, I did everything I was supposed to do, but Google just doesn't like me. Like, well, that's not – then you're not doing everything right, or you shouldn't be spending more money. It is not supposed to be a black hole.
Uh-huh.
So – really, what is SEO is there is Google out there. And actually, we should talk about more than just Google because one prediction I have is that within the next couple of years, we're going to see something other than Google as devices change. Like maybe we're going to do search from cars. And for all we know, Hyundai or Tesla will have a search engine.
Oh, because, interesting.
Yeah. And everything's changing, right? Like with all the devices we have in our homes, Facebook and Amazon and Apple are now search engines too, because if you ask those devices questions, they're using search to give you answers. So those are search engines.
Oh, and I don't believe that was – you touched on that in the book, did you?
I wasn't that predictive yet, but I'm there now.
Okay, so you listeners, that's a marketing book podcast extra, okay? There's no charge for that.
Absolutely. So that's what search is going to come down to. So whatever you're looking for answers on, there will be an engine behind that to give you answers coming from the internet. So again, that could be Tesla having their own search engine within the Tesla car, or that could be Hyundai when you ask questions to Hyundai. Right now, a lot of these things are running through Google because you have Google Auto, right? Or sorry, Android Auto. So that runs through Google. But there's no real reason that Hyundai, for example, or Tesla, for example, might not buy a startup search engine and power their own search and essentially cut out Google, right? That very well could happen. So when you think about SEO, SEO isn't how do I do best on the Google platform. It's really how do I best position my website that every search engine out there wants to put me where I'm supposed to be, right? And I'm not saying you want to rank high because that is not the goal of SEO. It means I want to find the users that are looking for me to find me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the core of what SEO is. It's search engine optimization, not Google optimization, but search engine optimization. And search engines need that SEO to happen. And again, this is where it's not a black hole. Search engines need that SEO to happen because search engines have a user. They have a user that wants to use that search engine and they need to get an answer. And if they don't get the answer, then they go to another search engine or they phone a friend or they go to social media. So Google or the search engine needs SEO to help best position the website so the search engine can best understand the website so they can best serve it to the user at the end of that entire search or the beginning of that entire search. So that's really all SEO is. All that rest of the stuff that everyone's selling about black hole and build links and stuff keywords, that's not helping the user. That's not helping the search engine user. You may have a short-term advantage if you're able to scam the search engine and appear higher in the search engine's results. But if a user is not going to click, or you know, one of my favorite ones, and Google has done a fantastic job of getting rid of this. One of the favorite things I used to show people when we talked about spam was do a search for something like diet pills or diet pills from Canada. And you see, like, you have all these websites that are completely hacked, like all, you know, EDU websites, it'll be university websites, it'll be hacked. They're suddenly selling diet pills from Canada. Maybe it works. Maybe you're able to show up on Google, on the top of Google for now, and Google can't catch the hack. However, what user is buying from a website like that? So that's the, so you've achieved something that is, it's actually pretty complicated to achieve. But if you don't make any money, what's the point? So that's what it comes down to, is like, you get all your short-term tricks and like show up, but like Amazon can be number 10 on the results and you're still going to go to Amazon because you still trust them with your credit card. But if you have a spammy website that no one wants to trust with a credit card, that looks like garbage and the pictures look like garbage and it shows up and it's slow, you can be number one all you want and you're not going to generate business from it. So that's what SEO is really positioning yourself best so the search engines understand you, so the users will find you and the users will engage and do whatever it is that you want to do as a successful business.
Yes, it seems like one might be able to scam the search engines, but I've never heard of it ending well for the scammer.
Exactly.
So let me just quote from page 24 that I mentioned. SEO is quite simply an acronym for search engine optimization, and that is all it is. It's not a game of subterfuge with users or search crawlers. Rather, it is a process of taking known rules of how search engines work and building it into a plan to improve upon the visibility you might have if you did nothing at all. So let's talk about Eli Schwartz. I just want to quote from page 23. You write, "For the first half of my SEO career, I lived in fear of a search engine algorithm update." So Eli, why were you living in fear, and what happened halfway through your career that changed all that?
So I lived in fear because that's what I had learned SEO was. It was exactly what I said it wasn't a minute ago, which is this idea of scamming the search engines, of trying to do hacks and tricks to appear higher on Google and to show up, and then hopefully someone would click. So what happened was, is I was working at a startup and we were benefiting from hacks and tricks. I had a massive budget to buy links. We were duplicating our content all over the web, and it worked because that was the rules of Google of the day. This was in 2008, 2009, and 2010. I don't remember exactly when this happened. Those are the rules of Google of the day, and it worked. And everyone used those rules of Google at the time. And then Google, and Google's continuing to do this today, they continue to iterate and optimize their own algorithms to achieve their ultimate goal of understanding what a user wants and matching them with exactly what the user wants at that moment. So in that process, they're always looking for people that are scamming and hacking and using tweaks that should not be used because it doesn't achieve Google's ultimate outcome. They updated the algorithm. Now, I believe this, I think actually it was 2010. They updated the algorithm and they launched what's called the Panda algorithm, which is, or Panda update, which is now completely part of Google's algorithm. This thinking is a part of Google's algorithm, which is used to identify low quality content. And when that happened, the company I was working for lost 65% of all of our search traffic in one morning. And by the time all said, we had said and done, we'd lost 80% of our search traffic. Our company was we generated revenue from impression-based advertising, which meant that the more people that saw our pages, not even clicked on ads, but the more people that saw them, the more money we made. Losing 80% of our traffic meant that we had a catastrophic loss for the business. The company I was working for and the founders and the investors, they didn't cut and run. And we doubled down and figured out how to get out of that issue. And that's when I really learned SEO, of like, what is it that the users want? And how do we do this without scamming Google? And how do we do this without scamming users and really building a great product for users that when they find it on search, they'll really understand it? So that was when my first transition to like, this is what SEO needs to be. It's not about showing up on Google. And this was an automotive startup. We were number one. We were number six on Google for the word cars, which isn't even a relevant term anymore. No one searches the word cars when you're looking for a car. You're more specific. You might, and it's complicated because you search the word cars, you might find there's, I think, three Cars movies, and there's all different things. Yes. Right? You know, rent a car, but we were number six at the time for Cars. Like, we changed. We're like, we want to be found for the things we want to be found for, and have users engage with our website and generate more impression advertising. And by the time I left that company, we'd recovered all of our traffic and a lot more. So that was my transition over to SEO is about satisfying users and satisfying Google and understanding the, you know, the mix of the two and where those two concepts are married. And that's how you're successful at search and not about scams, hacks, and tweaks.
Yes. And there's one headline on the book where you write, SEO is not a dark art, in parentheses, anymore. Very well yes. done. And also there was just one other quote I want to read from page 41 that got me fired up. A lot of very quotable book here, Mr. Schwartz. You write, the Google algorithm is made out to be some sort of mystical secret recipe cooked up in a lab designed to simultaneously rob and reward sites at the whims of a magical, all-knowing wizard. In this outdated schema, the goal of every SEO and webmasters is to dupe this wizard and come out on the winning side of every update. This idea is rooted in a fundamental misunderstanding of what happens in a Google algorithm update and a fundamental misunderstanding of Google. So let's get into some of the product-led SEO discussion. And in reading this book, I was reminded of an expression I heard years ago along the lines of, Google doesn't love you until everyone else does first. And in the book, you write about, you know, how you recap the traditional keyword research approach to SEO, and it's one I'm pretty familiar with, and a lot of listeners are too. And then you contrast that with product-led SEO. So, without further ado, I want to read the title of chapter two and ask you to respond. And the title is What is Product-Led SEO?
And this is the most common question I get. And I'm happy that I was able – I didn't coin the term, but I'm happy that I was able to adopt this term and write a book about it. And I think understanding product-led SEO really actually requires what you skipped over, which is what is not product-led SEO?
Please.
The idea of doing keyword research. And I want to explain this with an example of a friend who was asking me for help with SEO. This is before I wrote the book. So this is a friend. They started I'll change some details. But they started an insurance company, an insurance startup. They raised a lot of money. And they wanted to do – they were spending a lot of their money they raised on paid marketing on Facebook. And they wanted to use some of that money to instead build an SEO strategy and start driving search traffic instead of advertising on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And they said, what do we do to rank number one on insurance and car insurance? And I said, nothing. It is impossible. You cannot rank on insurance. You cannot rank on car insurance because Geico has been around for 20 years. Progressive has been around for 20 years. State Farm has been around for 20 years. They aren't going to give up their top positions on Google simply because you raised tens of millions of dollars. So this isn't something you should even try to do. But let's pivot for a second. What is it that people are buying from you? What is it that people are advertising when you are on – what are you advertising when you are on Facebook? And again, changing details here, this friend mentioned that their product, although it helped people to find good insurance products, the people that converted the best and the audience that they found was a good fit for them were people that had passed, let's say, felonies in their driving career. They had drunk driving instances. They had served time in prison and it was harder for them to get insurance quotes. And this company was really good at helping them actually get insured. So I said, why would you not create your SEO strategy around that? Why would you want to be visible on just the word car insurance when you're competing against every single website that does car insurance and all the companies that do car insurance? Why would your SEO be around keywords like car insurance when that is not who your customer is? Instead, and now we talk about product-led SEO, why would they not create a product around those specific users? So instead of grading content because a lot of people search the word car insurance, understand what is it that people who their audience would be looking for help as they go through their car insurance journey. Again, that's not a great example of product-led SEO, but it does have the principles of product-led SEO, which is let's think about the user. What is it that the user is looking for when they do that search? And what is it that we need to show them to understand why we're a good fit? Now, you may not have a ton of people searching for that those terms, but the people that do search for those terms, they're a great fit and their conversion rate will be very high. Now, really shifting to what product-led SEO is, we do that at that concept at scale, which is there's a lot of users out there that are looking for something, but it's a something. It's not a word. So content-led SEOs are looking for specific keywords. So you put those keywords in content. Product-led SEO is people are looking for a specific experience, widget, solution. And now we build that widget slot or solution at scale. And the examples I used in my book are Zillow. So Zillow is not building SEO around my personal home address because not that many people are searching for it. However, they are number one or number two or three and get a lot of search traffic for my home address. Because what Zillow did is they said, what is it that people are searching for in our space, which is the real estate space? They want to know how much their house is worth. They want to know how much their neighbor's house is worth. They want to think about buying a new house. So they created a product around that, which is, again, that didn't exist, but when they did it, when you look for someone's personal address at the time, they did is they got different homeowners associations, they got data from pictures from the MLS, and they built a product. That's the SEO they did. So that's what product-led SEO is. You're building a search product that engages with the users for what they are looking for, and that is how you do your SEO, and it's more of a company-wide effort, a website-wide effort, an architecture-wide effort, rather than I'm going to write a specific piece of content around a specific word, and that is my SEO.
So going back to the example of the insurance company that helps people who've had felonies, if they had taken it a product-led SEO approach, would they have then had something on their website that was even more relevant than an article about that topic? In other words, like some sort of data-driven thing where people could find their own options for the insurance?
Well, the reason I said it's not a great example of product-led SEO is because I don't think they could build it at scale. So at scale, I mean Zillow can build for 100 million addresses in America. TripAdvisor can build for every hotel in the entire world. That's more scale. The insurance company, they don't need to write a blog post about how hard is it to get insurance in New York when you have 3 DUIs? How hard is it to get insurance in Texas when you have 2 DUIs, right? Like that is where it gets different. You don't need to write one specific blog post. So that's where they can a little bit productize it. So you now have 50 possible states with a couple different felonies, and that's your scale. But it doesn't scale at the sense at the Google at the same height as a Zillow might scale or a TripAdvisor might scale. But that, again, is a product because people in Texas have a specific need around insurance for DUIs, and people in New York have a specific need around insurance with a DUI. So you're not writing one blog post and saying, well, here's the story about what happens when you have a DUI in New York. It is really building a product page where your content is modified based on, let's say, the different laws. And it is different in New York than it is in Texas, but it is templatized. So you could pull in the snippet of the law. You could pull in snippets of rate differences when you have a DUI in New York or when you have 2 DUIs versus 3 DUIs or a felony conviction where you serve time in prison or different things. You're building a product and you're not writing content. So I said it's a somewhat of an example of product-led SEO, but doesn't take it all the way to Zillow or TripAdvisor direction.
So let me give you an example of what I think is product-led SEO that we actually stumbled into a couple of years ago without realizing it. So we have a client that's an economic development authority in a municipality, and we wanted that client to rank for commercial real estate in that city. So what we ultimately did was we built a rather rudimentary directory of all the currently available commercial real estate by pulling in data from other sources where it's listed. And now it's on the first page of Google if someone searches for commercial real estate there. Rather than writing articles about commercial real estate there, people can actually go there and enter in what they're looking for and find it. Is that an example of product-led SEO?
I'd say that's a better example of good SEO. Product-led SEO is I really think about from a product standpoint, which means I'm, again, and this is why I talk about Zillow in the book. Mm-hmm. when Zillow did their SEO strategy, and just a disclaimer, I don't know their SEO strategy. I don't have never talked to anybody at Zillow about their SEO strategy, and I've never worked for Zillow. But when you look at what Zillow gets most of their traffic on, it is a product. It is the landing page for each person, each home in America. That was created as a product and created by product managers, not created by an SEO team who's like, well, here's this address. Let's do 123 Sesame Street. Let's write an article about 123 Sesame Street. Mm-hmm. Okay, post it. Now we're going to do 124 Sesame Street. It could not have happened that way. That's impossible to scale. Instead, a product team said, we want to build a page for every house. Here's the place where we're going to put the address. Here's the place where we're going to put the individual images. Here's the place where we're going to pull the government data on how much the house was purchased for. Here's the place where we're going to put the taxes. Here's the places where we're going to put similar homes based on an algorithm. So that's a product, and that's where the search traffic comes from. They've created a product that actually can only be found two ways. One way is you're on their website and you search and you find that house within their website. The other way is search, SEO.
So that's why in the book you also talk about the importance of collaborating with engineering and people and product people. It's not just a marketing SEO trick we're doing here. You actually have to collaborate with other people and think even more about the user, I guess.
I'll think only about the user, not just more. And it's really, it's not even collaboration. It's a must. It's the SEO teams, and again, I call it product-led SEO. The SEO teams that I have seen be the least successful, and I've been in this position multiple times, is when I am on just a marketing team and my only SEO lever is being able to tell a content person who is not me or on my team, please use this as your title. Please talk about this keyword three times or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't even own any levers. Now, when you're on a product team, you can say, this is how we're going to formulate the product. This is how the engineers are going to build it. I find that when you're on product teams, engineers are more agnostic about the design and layout of the page. So that's when you have an opportunity to really mold how it's going to look, to mold what the words that are going to be used and how it links to different pages. When you're on a marketing team, the product and engineering team work alone without you, and then you're stuck as an SEO person coming in after the fact and saying, would you mind making this change? Could you use the URL like this? The piece of content I have, this is where I need it to be, but you're it's relatively inflexible at that point on actually having SEO best practices.
Right, and that explains why you have that funny and somewhat disturbing story at the beginning of the book about how when you started at SurveyMonkey, you asked the engineering folks to make a change, and they said, no, 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 marketing doesn't tell engineering what to do. And you had just started that job thinking, well, how am I supposed to do my job? So anyway, it was very attention-grabbing. You mentioned content there, and I wanted to ask you to destroy a myth or cause trouble. So get ready, folks. And that's on page 71 where you talk about content is king, and we've heard that so much that it's become tiresome. But you're right, content is king has become a part of the marketing lexicon without distinction. Explain what you mean there.
So this idea that content is all you need and everyone just writes content without thinking of what that content is supposed to do.
Oh, and that's a widespread belief.
Yes, that is a widespread belief. And that's what I mean when it comes, let's say this car insurance website. They were just going to write an article about car insurance, not thinking about they're really good at people with felonies. They need to write about people with felonies. Can't even compete on regular people that don't have felonies, but they can, but their pricing is not competitive. So writing content that talks about that is a complete waste of time. And I would stretch that further, that content is king, because this idea that content is king and content is the most important part of SEO is you need to use words, that has taken on a complete life of its own. So much so that I was once, I lived in Asia for a couple of years, and I had a great time. We're traveling around and seeing that part of the world. And I was able to stay in a lot of luxury hotels because it's fairly inexpensive to go to many countries. Like I stayed in a Ritz-Carlton in Jakarta, Indonesia, and it cost less than a Holiday Inn anywhere in America.
Oh, really?
So you get these great experiences. So I was going away with my family, and I was looking at the reviews of a 5-star hotel or 4-star hotel, and I think in Cambodia. And I wanted to make sure the room was actually going to be big enough for my wife and my kids. You know, our kids are going to be sleeping in the room. So I was reading the details of the room. A lot of times people don't look at the details of a room because this is the room. It's, I got a bed there. And, you know, we have a certain level of expectation, but I just wanted to look at the size of the room. And I noticed it talked about a lot of features. It said that there was a bathtub and the bathtub had water that came out of the bathtub. That's content being king. Somebody said, oh, well, we're writing about a hotel room. Here's some keywords. Make sure you use the word bathtub and toilet and water. Like, no one is going to search on those and find, this might have even been a Ritz Carlton. That doesn't matter. That's a waste of time. And that actually, in my eyes, diminished everything about the hotel and diminished the agency that they used to help build those pages and actually probably help the SEO, because that was definitely an SEO suggestion.
So instead of content, then they should be delivering something that is useful for them, more product-driven. How could that hotel have done a better job?
So I think Marriott does a pretty good job of this, which is they conceptualize what is it that we need to templatize for every single hotel across the entire world. How do we templatize the room page? I think they do a great job at templatizing, but they probably also give a little bit too much control to each local property. And because I think the local properties are franchises, so that local property could potentially go out and hire their own SEO agency. And I'm going to invent a word here, uglify the page.
Yeah, sometimes uglifying, which I love that term, sometimes that happens all by itself. So yeah, that's interesting. It also reminds me in a weird way of a customer experience where, you know, the companies that are really successful at creating a great customer experience, it really didn't happen by accident. They do some serious engineering in order to make that happen. I mean, think of a place like Disney or some of the hospitality that does a really good job.
Yeah.
So let's go to something else on page 73 where you say that you write, personally, I think content should be considered with the same gravitas as deploying a highly paid salesperson. Explain what you mean there. And I just so folks listen, in the explanation on the following page, you talk about a slurring, sloppy drunk. And you know, for a moment there, I thought you were talking about me. But talk about what you mean when you say that content should be considered with the same gravitas as deploying a highly paid salesperson.
I wasn't even thinking about this when I gave my hotel example, but that's exactly what I mean. So you think about this hotel, and for everyone that's ever stayed at a Ritz-Carlton, you walk into the front, they have their perfume and it smells really good, and the person opens the door for you and they're wearing a great suit, and all those things that make you feel like you're getting a great experience, those aren't necessarily the salespeople, but they are doing sales. If the person at the front was a drunk, you wouldn't check in, right? If the front desk person yelled at you, you wouldn't check in. You'd cancel your reservation. So this is all sales and helping convince you that this is worth your money, that you're staying in a nice hotel. Now, think about two steps before that. I'm looking to book the hotel and I see that they uglified their page with bathtubs and water and toilets are in the room. And so I'm like, was there a question that a Ritz-Carlton was not going to have a toilet in the room? Maybe I should reconsider. So that's what I mean, that the content is a salesperson. And SEO gets siloed away from the rest of the business, where a business is doing a great job of brand and making sure that everyone respects the brand. And they do a great job of design, making sure that the design evokes the right emotions. And they do a great job of sales, that when a salesperson goes through their process, they can convince someone to cut a check or do whatever it is that to sign up with the business. But then they have SEO, which is jammed full of keywords and is also doing sales, because many people are going to find the business from search. And it doesn't sell because it's full of keywords and it's full of words and it's written in ways that don't necessarily satisfy a user, but somebody somewhere thought it satisfied a search engine. So that's what I mean that it has to do with sales. The person that lands on that page coming from search is a prospect and they do need to be sold. If the content is written terribly or does not actually have that muscle in it that is going to help you close that business, that's a bad salesperson.
Ah, okay. Let me just quote from a couple of sections in the book here on page 74. You write, I think we need to put an end to the idea that content is king, and therefore writing content is an end unto itself. Content is a business tool like any other. When content is correctly viewed as an instrument of success, Setting arbitrary goals on content seems even more ridiculous. Only a fool would mandate spending a set amount on paid advertising, even if it never converted. Yet these kinds of objectives are commonplace around content. And then the next page, you write, you can't focus on search engine bots and expect the user to also be satisfied, but you absolutely can rely on the search engines following along if you focus on the user. So let's talk about tools. You write that relying on software to diagnose your SEO problems or even tell you that you have SEO problems is asking for trouble. Getting an accurate view of where you are always requires a human. And then there was a funny story to me. You write, I was once talking to an entrepreneur about accelerating the SEO performance on his site. And I suggested he might want to get an SEO site audit to understand what is presently working and where there might be issues. He immediately rejected that idea, saying, we already have Moz, so we're good. explain what he was talking about and why that was such a problem.
Yes. So there's a, for the listener that's not familiar with what Moz is, there's a number of tools out there, and more so now even than when I wrote the book, which is just 2 years ago and I wrote these words. There are tools out there that try to incorporate best practices that Google has shared or has been become best practices over the 20 years Google search engine optimization has been around.
Like Moz or Ahrefs, exactly. Or SEMrush. Yeah.
Right. All of those. And there's even more of that. And there, you know, even HubSpot has one, a website grader. There's many of them. And they're very simple things to do, which is, let's say a best practice is your website. Your title tag of your website needs to have less than, I think now, 55 characters. So it'll crawl your website and say, hey, guess what? You have 70 characters, X mark for you. You don't get it. You're not good. You're not following best practices. Or I don't know, we can dig in this later, but talk about page speed. Your site is not fast enough. It's a simple metric of how fast your page loads. Fail. You're not fast enough. So that's what a lot of these tools will do, is they'll take basic best practices and say, site's too slow, you don't link enough times, your title tags are too long, your content's too long. It's that kind of idea. So I compare that to someone going to a doctor, someone going onto WebMD and taking a health checkup and be like, I'm good, I'm healthy. But it doesn't really it doesn't look at the full picture. Mm-hmm. So that's what an SEO audit would do. An SEO, and I don't really do SEO audits because I personally don't find them to be that helpful, because usually they're templatized and they're this idea of like, hey, here's how long your title tags are. That doesn't necessarily mean good or bad. I like to understand the user, how how the website appeals to users and connects with users and generates revenue from users. But an actual SEO audit done by a human would have been something along the lines of like, who are the users and who searches for this and are the users finding it? And what happens when the user lands on the page? And do they use mobile? Do they use desktop? Do they use a voice assistant? That looks at the full picture the same way a doctor says, oh, you exercise, you run 30 miles per week, but you also eat 80 hot dogs while you're exercising. No, like that, you're failing some way because there's context there. And I think that's the difference. None of the tools out there have any context in them. They just look at raw metrics. Whereas when you do an actual audit, you can look at context and dig deeper where there's places that need to have more digging.
Yes. Great. Let's move on to another one of these Schwartzisms that I think
I love that.
It's just interesting. You write on page 92, you write, I always recommend early stage companies first spend as much as they are comfortable allocating toward paid marketing before they shift to SEO.
This is going to be my contrarian thing here, and I'm sorry if I upset everyone in the SEO world by always saying this.
You got my attention.
I say this on podcasts and I say this in interviews, and I just said it in a conference with 2,000 people, and I saw on the side chat of the conference, they're like, thanks for ruining our business. But I really, really believe this, which is SEO done right, and most people will admit this, SEO done right is going to take 12 to 24 to 36 months to really see the value of that. Like, think about the most successful SEO businesses in the world, like a Zillow, like a TripAdvisor. They didn't turn this on and overnight demand suddenly met their supply. It was a gradual process of, hey, people are searching for this. Google's like, hey, people are searching for this. Users are like, oh, I searched for it. I found it. Let me do some more searches. That takes a long time, especially when you're creating products, especially when you're in a competitive environment. That's a long effort. Whereas with paid marketing, you have instant gratification. Spend your money, do things right, You should know if you're getting users or not, and you should know if those users are driving revenue for you. So whenever I talk to early stage companies, and it doesn't matter whether they're startups, they're just earlier in their marketing journey, I think they need paid marketing for two reasons. One, they need revenue. You need to prove that your business can sell, and you need to have revenue coming in the door so you know that you can survive another day. You can pay your employees, you can pay your website hosting bills, you can pay for your office, whatever it is you need to pay for. If you do SEO, it's only a sunk cost. You're just investing and waiting for something to happen. Hopefully it happens at the end of a long period of time. Now, the other reason that it's really important for companies to do paid search first or paid advertising on Facebook first is because you need to prove the model. So going back to the example of my friend who with the car insurance company, they were doing a lot on paid search and a lot on paid advertising. And they discovered from that process that they had a specific appeal to a specific kind of customer who had a specific kind of problem. Had they not done that, they would have come to me and said, hey, we're an insurance startup. We've raised a ton of money. Let's optimize for insurance. And at the end of that process, where I don't think they ever would have been visible on Google, mm-hmm. but let's say they would have been visible on Google, they would not have connected with the customer because they weren't the right fit. Now, by doing paid search, they found their user, they found their angle, were able to adapt their marketing across their entire marketing stack within their email, within their social media, within their branding. This is what our company does. Now you take that and you leverage it into a search strategy. And when you, at the end of a process, 12 to 24 months, it pays off because they know that the users that come forward, they can close. Whereas the other way around, you're saying, this is what my SEO strategy, I hope it works. And if it does work and you have not connected with the user, you've wasted all that time and all that money and all those resources and may not even be around long enough to know that.
Mm. Well, that's great advice. And also, there was a book on the show probably last year, Mike Rhodes' book on Ultimate Guide to Google Ads. Terrific book. And in it, he talked about how much information you can get by running, for instance, pay-per-click ads or any of the Google ads, where you can do all kinds of unbelievable testing that people don't realize, which is helpful, like you're just describing right there, where they were able to get information that way and pivot to something that made more sense longer than, you know, waiting for the cows to come in. So I want to go to chapter 4 on page 103, which is titled SEO and Digital Marketing. And you write, a number of years ago, I partnered with a well-known brand to help them understand why their organic traffic had hit a revenue plateau after many years of double-digit growth. They assumed they were under some sort of algorithmic penalty, or maybe they had broken something technically within their site. With millions of pages translated across dozens of languages, I started digging. I assumed it would be a lengthy effort. However, within minutes of gaining access to all their performance data, I found the answer to the puzzle. Ira Schwartz, don't leave us hanging. What was it?
So this particular company had allowed spam to propagate across their platform.
Like in comments or something?
I don't want to give away too many details, but there was a user-generated aspect to this company.
Okay.
And what they did was they allowed people to create this content, and their SEO efforts were really a self-fulfilling cycle. So they would say people create this content, and then they automatically link to other relevant content, which then links to other relevant content. And then what happens is when people do those spam sort of searches, they find that content. So they create more of that content. And then you go straight down right off a cliff because all of that keeps running against themselves. And that was their problem. So whereas they thought, and what was interesting about this company was they were creating all this traffic and not creating a ton of revenue because they don't make money from that spam. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, you know, I talk about this a lot in my book, which is the focus of your SEO efforts has to be on revenue. Everything else, it's just a vanity metric. If you get a ton of traffic, it's useless. You can't pay your employees with your traffic. If you have number one positions on Google, but no one clicks and no one buys, you can't pay your employees. So this company, they were so focused on traffic and created all their algorithms of traffic and were so proud of the traffic. Their revenues were declining. Their traffic was also declining. But at one point in time, their traffic was climbing and still their revenues were declining because they had the wrong SEO effort, bringing the wrong kind of users in who did not pay them anything.
Right. And the book is really clear for the listener to know that it, you know, you talk about these vanity metrics in search, and you can have all kinds of great traffic, but you know, it's hard to work for a company that's insolvent, even if it's getting a lot of great traffic. And you explain how to do that. But let's talk a little bit more about that as it relates to, you know, the primary success metrics for SEO. There's a term in your book I'd never seen, but I loved it. Please explain what SEO applause is and more about some of the other things that people should be looking at, you know, beyond the revenue you just mentioned.
Wait, is that a term I use? SEO applause?
Yeah. It's on page, let's see here.
I don't remember using that.
It was on page 105. Also generated SEO applause and even a proud pat on the back, but that was a very different era, and it turns out page ranking was never a great indicator of business impact anyway. Mr. Schwartz, I realize you didn't write this book in the last week when I was reading it, but SEO applause, I love that term. So besides revenue, what are some of the other things folks should be looking at?
So I'm still hung up on the fact that I came up with that term, SEO applause.
Own it, brother.
I am. There are a bunch of things I came up with in my book that I'm happy to own. So I'd say at the time when I – you know, when this happened, SEO applause was only rankings. No one really thought about traffic. And I'd say users were, let's go with dumber. And they did click on things and just because they were ranking. And right now users are so much smarter. So I think revenue is the most important metric, but I think it's important to really be cognizant of the fact that there are businesses that drive other sort of KPIs. So they may drive app downloads. So therefore being visible around your app is important. They may be focused on signups. They may be focused on registrations for a webinar. You know, I've not actually been successful in consulting engagements with many B2B companies because, or more expensive high ticket B2B companies, because the SEO process is very, very early in their sales funnel. So someone might do a search and then they might do a lot of other searches and then eventually someone will fill out a lead form and then 6 months later, a salesperson will sign a deal. No one can ever really attribute back to the original search that SEO added any value.
Hmm.
So in that case, you want to come up with other metrics where it's, did someone search and did they read a blog post? Did someone search or they decide to follow the company on social media? Or did they search and then fill out a form to maybe watch a video or something like that? That's, I think, is important. So revenue is, I think, the most important metric. But revenue is the lagging metric in all businesses. So many other things happen. But it is critical that when you are building SEO, you do find a metric that will indicate whether the investment you make, and there's absolutely investment, the traffic is not free, is worthwhile. So if it's, like I said, a high ticket sales item that takes many months to close, then figure out some sort of other metric to prove that SEO did begin that sales process. It is hard. Granted that it will be very hard, or if it is a e-commerce is the easiest. People don't really come back. They find it, they like it, they buy it, and they check out. But I again, be cognizant of the fact that there are other ways to prove the value of the SEO effort than just a dollar at the end of a sale.
Right, and in the book, I think in the same chapter, you talk about, you know, the role of SEO in marketing. Okay, and where it fits in the funnel, and you talk about this concept that you just described, organic as an assist. Organic as an assist. I think it's very helpful for folks to understand because it's not you know, some end-all be-all that I think, as we've talked about, some folks are going to say that's all you need to do. Let's get back to the human part of that, the guy that said, no, I got Moz, I got what I need. And what I mean by that is you talk about buyer personas. And of course, you know, any book that talks about buyer personas is just, you know, a number one in my estimation. And you talk about, I guess on page 121, personas might be passé, believe it or not. I think they're still not used enough. But when it comes to SEO, I recommend that some sort of persona research be the foundation of any good keyword research. So in other words, if you're getting some, let's say you're a manager and you're paying for SEO and your marketing people have it, one of the smart questions would be, okay, you're getting this work done. Does it include any kind of persona research? Is that a good thing for them to know, even if they're not SEO experts? And B, what are some of the things that should go into good persona research for SEO?
Yeah, so where I say that personas are passe, and I'm going to criticize more consultants right now and apologize if anybody feels criticized, not personal. Sometimes consultants and even employees, and I've done this as an employee, like to invent work. So they say they're doing something and providing value, but it's not really valuable. So I was once in a process where I was on a team, a cross-functional team, where we spent 6 entire months developing personas and building decks. And we had a designer that drew out what each person looked like and what they had for lunch. There was a lot of stupidity in that persona research.
Was it based on any interviews or was it just out of their own head?
It was based on all of that. And then they put it into a deck and they pasted it on the wall and no one did anything about it. They just continued doing whatever they did. No one ever did anything. Every once in a while, someone would be like, oh, that's like persona Michael. But like, it didn't really change anything whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean that they're passe. Now, when it comes to search, I don't think you should do that 6-month process of here's our persona and this is what they eat for lunch and they like to wear plaid shirts and they like to wear shorts when it's hot outside. Like that was so stupid what we came up with. I think with SEO, it's something a lot quicker and it could take a 5-minute brainstorm, which is understanding who that search user is. For Zillow, is it someone buying a house, selling a house, or just creeping on their neighbor? What are the things they'd be looking for in either of those scenarios? For TripAdvisor, is it someone going on an aspirational trip or looking to spend money immediately? For the car insurance company that I referenced multiple times now, is it a person with a felony or is it the parent of a person with a felony? Is that someone doing a search on their phone? Are they doing a search on a computer or are they doing a search on an assistant device? Or are they doing a search in their Tesla in the car on whatever search engine their Tesla has, right? So that's what I mean by persona research, because that should dictate how you appeal to that user. If you're a restaurant, the persona is, am I appealing to people looking for a quick lunch or am I appealing to people looking for fine dining? Again, that should dictate how you go about your SEO instead of, well, I am a restaurant, so therefore the keyword I need to use is restaurant. No, you're not a restaurant. Are you fine dining or are you fast food? Those are different kinds of keywords. And I did go down a hole here that I don't want to go down, which is I don't think most local businesses should bother with SEO at all. I've seen this too often. Movers do a terrible job of SEO. They should do a good job of moving. And when I moved, I found companies with terrible websites. And then I wasn't sure if I could trust the movers. I would have been better off just finding their page on Google My Business or on Yelp, and they should not have had their ugly website. But again, whatever it is that you're doing, understand the frame of mind. And if a mover were going to do SEO, what are the terms I'm searching? Am I searching move from California to Texas? Or am I searching mover near me? Or am I searching mover with a truck, an 18-foot truck? That's what you have to get into their heads. And like, again, am I on my phone? Am I on my device? Am I in my car? Mm-hmm. And that is how you should be doing your SEO.
Right. So interesting. Well, but it seems like they should still have websites just so that somebody like you could look at it and say, all right, these guys seem reputable. They seem professional.
Yeah. So that my criticism there is too often local businesses have bad websites. So I think it's better to have no website than a bad website.
Ah, okay. Okay. So jumping ahead to a couple other things that I found very interesting. It has to do with SEO and your competition. This is on page 141. I just want to quote, you write, competition and competitors are always a touchy subject in any business strategy. In the offline world, attacking a competitor costs a pretty penny and is very visible. However, online, there are many areas of opportunity to unseat a competitor without breaking a sweat. But then you go on to write, I think many sites approach competition the wrong way with regard to SEO. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so essentially companies are thinking about the competitors as their natural competitors. So if you are, let's say, a mover in a very specific city, if you're a mover in Dallas, you think of your competitors as other movers in Dallas. But when you're doing SEO competition, you need to think about who else shows up as a mover in Dallas. And that is where you want to position yourself and get more of that traffic and more of the customers that will come on those terms, because we're focused on the user who is searching for mover in Dallas and what are they going to see, rather than I just need to appear for specific keywords or I need to just beat the competition I know about. As an example, there's a company I'm working with right now where they were ranking on a very specific keyword related to their business for a very long time. And that keyword included the word website. Google in September changed the way their algorithm approached that keyword when you search that keyword plus the word website, that now instead of ranking them at number one, they're ranking them at number nine, and they're including aggregators who talk about those kinds of websites like PC Mag or some local magazines. They talk about your selection of those kind of websites. Now those sites are ranking. So when it comes to competition, this company might not have thought they were competing against PC Mag, but now they are. Mm-hmm. They might not have thought they're competing against Time Out Magazine, but now they are. So that is the way we need to approach SEO competition of like when someone finds that, does that query, how do we get higher on that query? Or if we are at number nine, how do we get someone who sees us to want to click our result?
Mm-hmm. Great. So couple of quick things I want to ask you about that were very interesting before we wrap up. And I don't know if you're like me, but every day I'm getting emails from some places around the world saying, hey, can we buy a link from your website or can we write a this? And it's just, I'd like to personally thank Google for the spam button because then I never have to see these folks again. But you write about the importance of links. In other words, links to your website, quality links. But you write that the most effective way to generate backlinks is to not focus on them at all. Eli Schwartz, what the heck are you talking about?
Sorry to be contrarian again here.
So, yeah, do you get a sense of some of the things in the book that just really resonated with at least one knuckleheaded reader?
Oh, I mean, I wrote this book because I wanted to have a book for consulting. And then next thing I know, too many people are buying it and reaching out to me and telling me that they've been thinking these things. I'm so happy that I have a book. So I'm glad I put them down. But what it comes down to is like links have been around for 20 years since Google's – or 21, 22 years since Google started including them in the algorithm. And people gained them. So what Google did is – ultimately, Google's goal, and I've talked about this a couple times in the podcast, is to understand exactly what it is a user wants and provide that for them. So Google needs to compensate for the fact that there are spam links out there. People are gaming the algorithm. So if you game the algorithm, and like I talked about earlier, the websites where they're trying to sell diet pills from Canada, they have gamed the algorithm with lots of different things, but that is not in the user's best interest, and hopefully users don't buy from those websites that are spamming the algorithm. So links on their own don't really matter because Google can detect when they're natural and whether they even matter. As an example, when I was at SurveyMonkey, on three occasions, we got links from the White House, from whitehouse.gov. From a raw domain authority standpoint, I would imagine, and I have never even checked, whitehouse.gov has got to be near the top. They're mm-hmm. authoritative. It's the White House. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter who's president, it's the White House.
Yeah.
However, on all three of those occasions, nothing happened at all because of those links. Because Google's contextual algorithm said the White House is the White House, but it's not that authoritative when it comes to giving authority to other websites. No one trusts the White House. No one wakes up in the morning and says, let me check out what is the latest from whitehouse.gov. Let's see what they're talking about today. So in that sense, the New York Times is more authoritative on the things the New York Times talks about because people trust them. So the algorithm trusts them.
Uh-huh.
So when it comes to links and the emails you mentioned, too many people are chasing domain authority. They're chasing metrics like that rather than chasing context, rather than chasing users. And like I said with the White House, those links didn't even matter. They're great links, but they didn't do anything. So that's why I think the best way to go about getting links is to have people talk about your business, because in that case, you win either way you look at it. If you can get a link in the New York Times and it is a link that no one – that is not – for whatever reason, Google's not going to value, you are still in front of all the readers that read that article in the New York Times. So even if – Google devalues that link and no one clicks it, they now know about you. So you win. If you chase a link deep, deep in the New York Times because you think it's valuable and Google doesn't trust it, but still no one reads it, you've wasted all your effort. So that's why I think the best thing you could do for links is get PR. Get people to talk about you. And there's even some agencies I love. They're great at this and they get links that even matter. But you get that PR, you get people talking about you, you get eyeballs, more people are aware of your business. Some of those links will count for Google. Some of those links will not count for Google. But if all you do is chase links just for the raw link value, for all we know, none of those links matter and you don't even get any eyeballs.
Yeah. And just so the listener knows, there's a whole section in that chapter about a PR approach to getting better links that you just touched on there. Eli, I just got to ask a couple more quick questions that I'm sure is going to piss off a lot of people. Would that be okay?
I think I've already pissed off a lot of people. So let's double down here.
Not that that was your intent, but on page 188, explain what you mean when you write, then maybe we've touched on this a little bit, but this one hit me. SEO is an optimization channel, not a demand creation channel.
I don't think this should piss people off. I can't answer that without pissing anybody off.
It's just one of those many things in the book where I just thought, interesting. You know, it's just, I don't know. Maybe there'll be other books that come along that sort of say, look, it's not the end all. SEO is not the end all be all.
I hope it is the end all be all. It's important. It's just important for the right companies. And what I mean by not, it's not a demand creation channel. And this was really a discovery with working with a specific client. This client, actually, let's talk about myself here.
Okay.
I didn't.
And also, Eli, if I ask you any questions that would require you to kill me after telling me, just go ahead and say I can't tell you. Okay.
Oh, I've already figured out all the things I'm not allowed to talk about.
Okay.
But let's say I didn't coin the term product-led SEO, but I have written more content with the word product-led SEO, and I've written a book about product-led SEO, and I own the website product-led SEO. So let's say product-led SEO was my term. So now I've done all I can to optimize for the word product-led SEO. However, no one searches for product-led SEO. So therefore, I get no traffic. And if I were selling something, I'm selling my book, I would sell no books. So that's what I mean that it's an optimization channel. I have optimized for product-led SEO, but I am not creating demand with product-led SEO. If no one searches for it, I don't sell anything. And I've seen this over and over with clients where they say, we're number 7 on this term. We're number 1 on this term. What do we do to get more traffic? And my only answer is change the world so more people search for that keyword. But if no one is searching, your position does not matter. Yes. So all you can do with SEO is make sure you're positioned well enough for those that do search to find you. But that is it. Demand creation actually comes from what I said earlier, the paid channels. You can force people to discover you, force people to click you by showing up many, many places. That's not necessarily demand creation either if no one wants what you have to sell, but at least you can create, you can get more eyeballs. It is in your control. Whereas with SEO, if no one searches, no one clicks.
So then is that part of why you write that for many categories, especially long sales cycle B2B, SEO is absolutely the wrong investment?
Yeah, it's like I referenced earlier. I think it's the wrong investment because you can never prove that it was the right investment.
Or do you mean like it's absolutely the wrong investment if that's the only thing you're doing?
Oh, by all means, it is absolutely the wrong investment. And you should do performance marketing first. And I want to give a great example here. You know, I had a conversation with Google Cloud. This was actually in a job interview. So I was talking to Google Cloud about potentially working for Google in SEO for Google Cloud. And I personally, and maybe I was a little bit too argumentative at the time, but I personally could not understand why Google cared about SEO for Google Cloud. It is a very, very expensive product for the people they're going after. They want to spend billions of dollars on using their cloud services. And they only have two realistic competitors, one Amazon, two Microsoft. That's it. So no one is Googling that term, I need cloud services, and decide, and let's say we're Netflix, right? You're Netflix, you're Googling, I need to switch off of Amazon, I need another cloud provider. No one is Googling and say, well, wonderful, Google came up number one, I'm buying it. So in that sense, how do you ever prove the value of SEO? Should they do SEO? A little bit, but should they spend millions of dollars on SEO? Never, not a chance. So that I think is a good way of explaining for things with long sales cycles. You could put money in SEO, but you'll never, ever prove that it was of value.
Because it's just so high in the funnel.
It's so high in the funnel and so many other touches happen.
Yes, yes. Okay. Like we talked about with the luxury case study you mentioned earlier. Yeah. So Let me just ask one last question about the book. I promise. It's page 256, so I'm running out of book. You write, in my 15 years of being deeply involved in SEO, I have heard many declarations around why an SEO effort ultimately ended up not being as successful as hoped. But I have found only one explanation to be factual. Eli Schwartz, what is it?
So it just happened to me in the last couple of weeks where a client informed me that they were no longer going to be working with me because SEO did not work. And I know exactly why SEO did not work in their case, because for the last 3 months, I'd been trying to get them to schedule a meeting because we wanted to talk about the roadmap we were in the middle of building. And they never responded to those requests for meetings. So I can agree with them. SEO did not work because they did not put any effort at all in SEO work. That is the only factual reason SEO will 100% fail. If you don't do anything, it fails. And I have this over and over with clients where they say, you know, this SEO effort is really not working. And I say, you have not done one single thing. I had a client after 6 months. They said, okay, we have an engineer now. We're ready to start an SEO. What should we do? And I said, the thing I told you on the very first day, which you never did, we can do step number one and we'll see where that goes. But other than that, I want to start at step number one. So that is the only factual reason, even with a company, even with the example I use with Google Cloud, where I don't think Google Cloud should necessarily be doing SEO, SEO will work for them. If you do it right, you will get traffic, you will get visibility. It may not be profitable, but it will work. But SEO does not work if you don't do.
Right. It's like the person that buys a health club membership in January to lose weight, and then they complain it didn't work because they actually never showed up at the gym. To exercise or watched what they were doing. Right, most SEO efforts I have seen fail did so simply because of a lack of execution. There were plans and plans and plans, but somehow none of it was ever implemented. The best laid strategies went to waste because no one bothered to take the first step. Eli Schwartz, if readers took only one thing away from this book, what would you hope it would be?
Can it be 10? No, I'm kidding.
Oh, it's a very unfair question, granted.
Yes. The one thing I say over and over about my book, and I think it sells, I don't know, Amazon's messing with the prices on my book. So I put it at, I think I said it should be $16 on Amazon, but it costs less. If the one thing you can take from my book
is... Well, I'm looking at it right now. It's $6.49 for the Kindle as we're recording this.
Go for the Kindle. So for $6.49...
Today. Yeah.
Today, if you buy my book and discover that you should not be doing SEO for your business, this will be the only $6.49 that you will ever spend on SEO, and that is the one thing you can take away from my book. If you discover that you should be doing SEO, there's lots of things and ways you could think about it. But I'd say 2/3 of the companies I have the opportunity to talk to, SEO is not a fit for them. So therefore, that's the one thing you can get from my book. Spend money on the book. Or figure out, borrow the book from someone so you don't even have to spend any money and discover that SEO is not a fit for your business. You will save yourself thousands and thousands of dollars of wasted effort and wasted investment.
You are a brave person to say that, but you can't say things like that if you're not knowledgeable. So kudos to you. What's one thing a listener could do today to put in action one of the many ideas from the book, just to get them to take that first step that I just mentioned so often never happens?
Find an actual user of your business and ask them what they would search for and what they would expect to find when they did a search. And I guarantee you, it will be something you never thought of. Yes. The problem with most SEO strategies is they start in an office.
Yes.
They start around a conference room. Like, here's what we should be doing to find users. And they don't necessarily start with a user. And in my book, I talk about doing surveys and looking at data, but like, ask a user what they're looking for. And that is who you, again, it's anecdotal. If you can find 10 users, that might be real, but at least find one user and see what they would look for if they were looking for your business.
Great advice. It almost sounds too simple, but the impact can be dramatic. Just go talk to some humans, folks. So, Eli, what books have most inspired your working career?
So the book I'm liking the most right now, actually two books. They're not marketing books. One is Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss.
Yeah, I've read that. That's great.
I love, like, I use it all the time. I use it with my kids' teachers. I use it with my kids. Another one is
Well, no, let's back up for a second. He was a FBI hostage negotiator.
FBI hostage negotiator.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wonderful book.
talks about like not doing win-win negotiation. He's doing win-only negotiation by using emotion, which I love. Another book I love is Pitch Perfect. And I've emailed the author to recommend that he do a little bit of SEO himself. I never do outbound SEO, but this book I love. Pitch Perfect is about how to speak and how to present in meetings. And the reason I think he needs to do a little SEO is because there's three movies, Pitch Perfect, Pitch Perfect 2, and Pitch Perfect 3, which are very popular movies. They use the same title, and it's very hard for this book, which I think is absolutely amazing, to be found. So this, I really strongly recommend anybody read this book if you present in public or you appear in meetings or anything like that. And then another book, again, on the same topic, and I don't know if you've had him on your podcast, is John Hall's Top of Mind. Really, yes. How to build relationships with people. So those are the three books I really love, and they're not marketing books. They're people books.
That's true. And that's a terrific book. I interviewed John about it a couple years ago. I'm a big John Hall fan. And I'll include a link to his interview. Is the book Pitch Perfect, is it How to Say It Right the First Time, Every Time by Bill McGowan?
Yes.
Okay. So I was on Amazon here. I typed in Pitch Perfect. All the movies came up.
I told you. That's the problem. It's even worse on Google because you do Pitch Perfect and it's like 10 pages of Pitch Perfect, the movie. But if you do Pitch Perfect book, then you find it.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting book. Well, are there any new or upcoming books that you know of that you're looking forward to seeing come out or read?
Andrew Chan has a book, The Cold Start Problem. I know Andrew Chan's a great thinker on all sorts of tech topics, so I'm looking forward to that book coming out. And there is another book that I keep forgetting to actually get about talking to strangers.
By Malcolm Gladwell?
No, it was someone else's book about talking to strangers. I read it in a review of it, and it just came out during the pandemic.
We'll figure it out, and I'll include a link to that book we're talking about on this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. Yep. So at Marketing Book Podcast, which is where we're going to include links to everything linkable, including all the books that have been mentioned, your site, both of your sites, your book site, your LinkedIn profile, your Twitter account, and everything else that we can add there. And to the listener, if you could, please do me a big favor and reach out to Eli any way you can. Go to his website, message him on LinkedIn, tweet at him, and thank him for being a guest on the Marketing Book Podcast. It's a terrific book. He's spent a lot of time with us, and past guests on the Marketing Book Podcast really enjoy hearing from listeners like you. And if you're listening on your smartphone and you've subscribed to the Marketing Book Podcast on your favorite podcast app, all these links can be found by going to this episode right now and clicking on the show notes link. Final quote, page 252. The time is now. Henry Ford famously said, pausing advertising to save money is like stopping a clock to save time. There will always be recessions and excuses not to start a new unproven SEO effort. Uncertainty is not the time to hit pause. For any company that has not invested in organic marketing, an uncertain time might be the best time to explore if there is an untapped opportunity in SEO. I want you to look back years from now and say that my book made a difference to you and your business. I want you to apply these principles in product-led SEO and from them gain unprecedented, even miraculous growth. But to do so will take consistent strategic effort. The time to begin is now. The book is Product-Led SEO, The Why Behind Building Your Organic Growth Strategy. The author is Eli Schwartz. Eli, thank you very much for joining us on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Great to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
And that closes the book on another episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it and found it helpful. If you are one of the hundreds of listeners who have left an iTunes review, let me return your kind favor by mailing you some Marketing Book Podcast bookmarks and laptop stickers. Just send me your mailing address anywhere in the world and I'll drop it in the mail. And since you're a listener to the Marketing Book Podcast and I read every book featured on the show, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or other resource I know of for whatever challenge you're facing, send me a LinkedIn connection invite with a message indicating that you're a listener so I won't mistake you for a spammer and ignore you, and I will do my best to get you pointed in the right direction. And remember the words of the entrepreneur and author Jim Rohn, who said, "Formal education will make you a living. self-education will make you a fortune. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.